Riverside, Coleman's Independent Radio, music from Coldplay, and it's called The Scientist at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night, 58 degrees outside, although you'd never know it because it's pouring down rain. This is Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio, doing something a little bit new tonight, and I'm going to let our good friend Big D tell you all about it. It's a brand new show for y'all right here in Coleman.
Welcome right here to Live 95.5, Coleman's Independent Radio. We're bringing you a brand new show with Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings, Understanding the Law. We're coming to you, and we're basically just wanting to bring some law to you. I know a lot of people has questions all the time. They don't know the ins and outs. And Melvin is going to be here every Tuesday, and we're going to bring some other attorneys in also, and go over different things of the law, different parts of the law, to let you understand, and also to have some listeners call in if you want to at 737-9505. That's 737-9505. Call in. Jay's going to answer, get your name, and we're going to let you talk to Melvin live right here on the radio and answer the questions that you have. I know it's tough sometimes if you have some questions and you really don't want to call anybody because a lot of times they want to charge you, you know, for advice. But Melvin is kind enough to have this show right now, and he's just going to help the community out, which is what we definitely need. So, Melvin, welcome to your own show right here.
Yay. Have we got that contract signed yet?
We do. The contract is signed, and hopefully we're going to go see Kiss together one of these days.
Hey, I got my tickets yesterday, July the 14th. I'll be up at Chicago Open Air Festival. I didn't even know about it. They closed on the Friday night, so we've done got five tickets. We're all going to dress up like we always do and go see them.
How neat is that?
It's fun. We've done it twice.
So when I was a teenager, you know, I had my fascination, I guess, with Peter Criss. So every Halloween I was Peter Criss. And look, I always looked so great. But now I'm going toward more Gene Simmons. So, you know, I may get on eBay, pay the $1,000 to get the entire suit and...
Hey, you can get on HalloweenCostumes.com. A lot of times you can find them for $2.99. Wow. I mean, get the real suit. I've got the real suit and the boots and everything else.
Because I've actually seen the boots on for like $400.
Yeah, and you can catch them for $99 and $1.99. Wow. They're always $1.99, but sometimes you can catch them $99. Yes.
That is all
I got to say to them. 7-inch heels.
Yes.
It's kind of weird walking in them. It's fun. I love it.
It is. Tower over everybody. My little 5'9" self would enjoy some height for once in my life.
Be 6 foot tall.
I would. So, look, we're going to go. I think what we're actually going to speak tonight is what kind of courts are there here in the city and the county of Coleman. So, why don't we just go ahead and go straight to that, and you kind of explain everything to us.
There are... In each county, there's pretty well four types of courts that you go to. There are city courts. Little towns can have their own courts. Like, for instance, in Coleman County, Hansville has one, and Coleman City has one. That's the only municipal, we call them municipal courts. That's the only municipal courts in Coleman County. So they have them. There's a district court. There's a circuit court, and then there's a probate court. And all of them kind of have their own, they handle different things. So not one judge. You know, a lot of times people come and say, hey, Judge so-and-so, and thought they'd get Judge so-and-so, and they don't get Judge so-and-so because Judge so-and-so may be their district judge, and you're trying to get a divorce, and you got to be in front of a circuit judge.
Right.
So it's kind of a...
All right, and I think I'm correct. Every judge maybe is elected into that position. Is that correct?
Except for the municipal courts. Yeah, the municipal courts, they the city council appoints them.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Coleman City Council appoints, it's Jason Knight here in the city of Coleman, and then Annette Parker is down at City of Hansville, so the city council hires them, appoints them and hires them.
So what exactly does the city court do? Is it traffic violations?
And misdemeanors, yep. Any type of a violation of a city ordinance or traffic law or any type of misdemeanor offense, then the city courts can handle it. They can't handle felonies, though.
Okay. And once again, we just want to let everybody know, if you want to go ahead and call in, it's 256-737-9505, 737-9505. So let's go ahead and walk over to the circuit court. Tell us what kind of cases that we see there.
Circuit courts are courts of general jurisdiction. I mean, they can hear any type of case other than ones that's specific for another court. For instance, adoptions. The exclusive court for adoptions is probate court. So if you go try to file an adoption circuit court, judge is going to tell you, or the circuit court clerk is going to say, we can't do that. You're going to have to go to probate court on that.
Okay.
You know, you try to file some type of a juvenile petition, circuit court is going to say, we can't handle that. That's a district court case. But generally, anything goes through circuit court. So most of the time, circuit court are the only courts where you pretty well have juries. There are some exceptions, like in probate court, but circuit court is where all your jury trials go. So if you have a crime that you're in front of a jury, it'd be circuit court. Divorce cases, circuit court. Workers' comp cases, circuit court. Car accident cases, if there's above a certain amount, $10,000, then you file it in circuit court. You know, they handle cases like that. And then circuit court does all the appeals. So if you go through probate court on most cases and you don't like the ruling, then you can appeal it to circuit court. Same thing in district court. If you go to district court, don't like the ruling, you can appeal it to circuit court and even city court. So let's say I go to city court and charge with shoplifting, a simple shoplifting. That's a misdemeanor. It happens in city court and they can charge you there. So if you get convicted there, you can appeal it for a jury trial in circuit court.
All right, so let me ask you this. What all in the different cases that you have, whatever you're in trouble for, that you can actually say, I want a jury by trial? Is it most anything?
Yes, any case you're entitled to a jury trial, but you're going to have to wait till you get to circuit court. So if you have a misdemeanor case or a traffic case or whatever else, you have to go through the process. You have to go through the lower court first, either in the city court. If you're in the city, if it's outside the city, you're in the county, you do it in a district court. You go through it first. If you're found guilty in it, then you can appeal it to circuit court for a jury trial.
Okay. Yeah. And if I say I want jury by trial, is it going to be delayed 1 month, 2 months before we actually go to that court case?
Yes. Yeah, when you go to once you get in the circuit court level, you have an arraignment. That's where you go plead not, you know, everybody kind of sees it. We enter a plea of not guilty. You know, you understand your charge. You read your indictment or complaint if you want it read. Most people don't have it read. They know what they're charged with. You plead not guilty, and then you go through the process. Usually within a couple of months, you'll be set on a docket that we have now. Kind of it's a plea docket. Have an opportunity to plead if you want to. And then you're set for jury trials on a jury trial docket now. You know, our jury trial docket, one time, I remember we'd have 40, 50 cases on there. Now they've kind of spread them out. They usually have 10 or 12 cases for each judge.
All right, so if I'm saying I want jury by trial, and I'm going to say 30 other people do, is that when the courthouse actually starts sending the notices out to everybody saying that you're summoned for court? Is that does it apply to that by me saying that if it's even a simple traffic ticket?
No.
No, so what does that apply to? Because I don't know.
You don't understand. They have certain criminal jury weeks set.
Okay.
For instance, next week is criminal jury week in Coleman. Again, we've already had one in February. There's one in March. Probably another one in May and June, and then they'll start back up around September and November and December. So there's specific weeks they set up for jury trials. So your case, as it comes up, gets assigned to one of these jury weeks.
Okay. So, and I don't know if you know the answer, but do you know exactly how many of these summons that they'll send out to people in Coleman City, Coleman County, for a certain...
Usually, we have 60 to 70 people shows up. Like next Monday, there'll usually be around 60 or 70 people to show up. Now, how many summons do they send out? I'd imagine you probably send a couple hundred out to get that, or 150. Because a lot of these people move, a lot of these people call, they can't, you know, maybe they're sick. They go, if I'm not mistaken, it goes by driving license. They'll look at, you know, it's a driving license database. So that's how it pulls. Yeah, that's how it pulls up the jury pool. And then, so some of these people, you know, passed away. Some of them sick. Some of them's moved. A lot of them calls in because they have some. It's inconvenience to come for them for that week, and they get excused. And then it usually gets down to around 60 or 70 people.
And exactly who is in charge of picking who they want? Is there attorneys out there that's going, I want this person, yes, and I want that person?
Actually, what you do is called striking a jury.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily that you're picking. You are
exactly
picking.
Okay.
You, there's certain people where you say, hey, I like this person for whatever reason.
Okay.
And then what you're doing is striking off the ones that you don't want. So it's not nothing against the juror, but maybe, for instance, let's say I got somebody charged with theft. Maybe there's this particular juror on there, Juror Smith, that's had his house broken two, three, or four times, and it, you know, you can tell he's disgusted with thieves. Right. Well, he's probably not going to be a good person on your jury.
He's guilty.
Yeah. So you know, we strike him off, okay, and then on the state side, the prosecutor side, maybe this guy's been given three or four tickets by this police officer, and he thinks he's not been treated fairly or whatever else. So the state says, "Hey, I don't want him on my jury." So what you do is you strike off. Each side takes turns. The state starts first, then the defendant, and you strike down to when you get 12 people. Once you get all the way down to to where there's 12 left, then that's your jury pool.
Okay. And I think maybe every county probably pays these jurors for a certain amount of time, a certain amount of money per day.
It's bad. Yeah, I mean, it's
$28 bucks or something.
It's something maybe like that. I don't even know if is it that much. It may be $10 or $20 bucks
sure.
a day, and then I think they give them a mileage fee or whatever else. But the good thing, the law states in Alabama that if you serve on a jury that. Your employer has to pay you, and he has to let you off work, too.
So they still get a full day's pay, then?
Yes. If you take off work, yes.
Plus that $12 bonus.
Plus that $12 bonus from the county.
I can tell you from experience, it doesn't help you when you're self-employed.
Don't forget now, it's 737-9505 to call in. If you have a question for Melvin, he'll be glad to answer it. 737-9505. So let's go over to the district court for a minute, and maybe you kind of explain that to us.
Yep. Now, let me go back to circuit court.
Okay.
Not all cases are jury trials in circuit court. You know, for instance, car wreck cases are usually jury trials. Criminal cases are normally, almost all of them are jury trials, unless it's someone that's less than age 21. There's a statute, it's called youthful offender. If someone's older than 18, so they're either 19 or 20, because they're less than 21, if they get in trouble, they can apply to be treated as a youthful offender. And it's just like a juvenile record. It's hidden. You don't get a jury trial on that. The judge hears your case and determines if you're guilty or innocent. And it has certain limitations. You only get a three-year sentence as the maximum on it. So that's something you take advantage of. But a lot like workers' comp cases, contract cases, they're tried by the judge. They're not tried by a jury.
Okay.
So not every circuit court case, divorce cases, they're not tried by juries. They're always tried by the judge.
Okay.
In there, but now district court is a judge only. That's a judge only trial. You don't have jury trials in district court. I can't think of a situation where you can. Like for instance, in probate court, even though that's just a judge court, you have a probate judge who hears your case, decides it. There are certain times when you can. Get a jury for like six people, you have to request in probate court. I don't know if anything in district court allows you to do it.
Okay.
But district court, that's where you have we have traffic court. So if you get caught, if you get in trouble in the county, any kind of traffic ticket, then that goes to district court. All misdemeanor cases start off in district court, and that's where it's decided. If you get found guilty, then you can appeal it. The state doesn't have the right to appeal. A case just to defend it. So if someone's found guilty, they can appeal it. If they found not guilty, the case is over with in district court on misdemeanors. And then juvenile cases, whether it means a juvenile delinquent kid's got in trouble, or you have a DHR case, juvenile case, that all occurs in district court.
Okay. Well, you are listening to Live 95.5 Coleman's Independent Radio. This is Melvin Hastings, Coleman attorney. And with our brand new radio show, Understanding the Law. So if you want to give us a call, ask a question, he'll be glad to answer it for you. 737-9505. This is Big D, and we're going to a break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Broadcasting from the People's Bank of Alabama studio. From a transmitter as powerful as a hairdryer. Hey, we got it on high. This is Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio. WRJMLP, Coleman.
This is Big D, the new voice of Live 95.5, bringing you creative design. They integrate cutting-edge graphic design into a high-volume printing operation, combining state-of-the-art technology with the artistic human element. Creative Design offers vehicle wraps, signs, banners, jerseys, and printed shirts of all kinds, hats, and so much more. They are the premier printers for Cosmic Sound, Live 95.5 on the Big D Radio Show. Let Tina Walters at Creative Design help you with your purchase and design. You can find them on Facebook, Creative Design, 256-734-7242. That's 256-734-7242. Now, back to the music.
Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio. We hope you like what you hear. In fact, we're betting on it, because you're still listening, aren't you? Stay in touch. Friend us on Facebook. Search for Live 95 Coleman or Google Live 95 Coleman for our website. Tell us what you think or make a request. And thanks for listening to the all-new Live 95. We're Coleman's Independent Radio.
Welcome back to Live 95.5, Understanding the Law with Melvin Hastings. Melvin, I want to go back to, you were mentioning something earlier about youthful offender. So, if somebody, and like you said, maybe they're 18, 19, and they do get to go back up under that youthful offender, does this go on their record permanently at all, or with any youthful offender, is it pretty well just never seen once they become an adult?
To the general public, it's never seen. Okay. The only people that can pull it up are probation officers and courts.
Okay.
So if they get in trouble in the future, then the courts can look at it. Now, the good thing about youthful offender, you can't use it against you. So it's not, you know, like a habitual felony offender act. If you keep the more felony, as you commit more felonies, the punishment gets tougher.
Got you.
Well, youthful offender doesn't apply any of those. It doesn't enhance your sentences.
Okay.
So it gives you an opportunity, if you're under 21, make a stupid mistake, to
right
to be able to move on. You know, right. It's not a conviction. You know, it's just like a delinquency, right. It's like a juvenile delinquency.
I understand. So look, we're going to go to Haley from Coleman. Haley, welcome in to Understanding the Law. What's your question?
Hey there. My question is, my husband has a little boy with another woman, and she doesn't take care of the child, her mother does, and the court has been just giving us this haggle, and the court won't let him have him, and we have our own home, we have our own jobs, and it just seems like a discrimination kind of deal, but we don't know what to do. She's not taking care of him, her mother is.
So is this, I mean, he has a child with another woman that he was married to, or they was not married?
They were not married.
Okay. So, see, if he was married to her, then what you would do is file a petition to modify a divorce decree. But since that's not the case, you have to go through district court. That's a juvenile, we call it a dependency case. And, you know, there's a lot to it. First of all, maybe one of the most important things is sometimes people don't realize you have to be legally declared to be the father of a child to get access to him in court. So what that means is you may have a child and it's yours, and his name's on a birth certificate, child has his last name, he holds the child out as being his own, but if he's never went to court and said, court, I want you to legally determine me to be this child's father, a lot of times he doesn't have rights to get in there and file stuff. So you have to do a paternity case first. Then you have to file for a dependency case saying, hey, look, you know, I'm able to take care of my child. The mother's not able, or the other parent's not able to take care of the child, and I want custody of the child. Then you file for custody. So there's a lot of... So as long as he's established legally, he's the father, that's number one thing you got to do. And then the second step is to is either file a dependency case, or if he's filed a paternity case in the past, you can go through the paternity case and file for the modification of custody. Sometimes people go to these paternity case courts, and all they do is get a child support order. They don't ever get custody determined, so it may be that he needs to actually get a custody determination at some points. And I know it does get frustrating. A lot of it depends if there's a prior custody order or not. You know, can the court modify it? You know, is there such a material change of circumstances to modify it? It may be simply that he just needs to do the file the right things to get in the court and get in front of a judge.
Go ahead, Ailey.
That's awesome. Thank you. We definitely needed some help on that one.
Yes, ma'am. Go talk to an attorney, and they can. I mean, most of them here in Coleman handles, a lot of them handles these kind of cases. I handle them. A lot of people handle them, and you can. We got things called out-of-court. You can look up and get a lot of information about people and see exactly what kind of situation he is, and most of them can lead you the right way.
All right, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Well, and, you know, and probably with Haley's situation, you know, that could be a lot other people, not only in Coleman, but other areas, that's going through the same thing that she's going through right now.
Yeah, and it's crazy. I'll tell you a story, and this is difficult. The judge ruled right, and some people might say this ain't right, but this is what happened. There's a situation where a man and a woman had a child together. He's on the birth certificate. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, he knew this child was not biologically his, but he was with her. Child has his last name. He's on the birth certificate. He's held this child out to be his own for 2 or 3 years, helped raise a kid. And all of a sudden, the real daddy comes in, files for custody, wants to be determined to be the father, has a DNA test that shows he's the father. So it excludes the first one. The second one has a DNA test. He is biologically the father. So he's trying to get custody of the child, and we go to court and have a hearing. This is in Morgan County, have a hearing on it. And, I mean, judge ruled right. That the first guy signed a paternity affidavit saying, I'm the father. He's held this child as being his own. And as long as he does that, he's the child's father. So even though he's biologically not the father,
right,
he is the father's kid.
And you know, and that's just something you see every week, every month, a case just like that. And or somebody's given up their child, and then they want to take the child back after two or 3 years because...
Yes.
Maybe she was not in a good situation. Maybe she was a drug addict. Maybe she's clean now. And that's just crazy.
It is. It's tough. You know, I see it all the time. I'm involved in cases like that now where parents are coming back from 2 or 3 years, taking off. They make some bad decisions, and they want custody of their child back. And, you know, you have to decide, is that in the child's best interest or not? That's what the judge, you know, and they do. They take consideration what's best for the child, but it does get tough because there are some parents that really wants their kids back. Then there are some parents that just doesn't. You know what I'm saying? They're just going through the motions. So you have to try to weed through.
I have to jump in here and ask this question. So I hear quite often that, you know, the judges are not supposed to make the law. They're supposed to interpret the law. And I hear if you want to get the law changed, you're supposed to go to the legislature, you're supposed to go to, you know, Congress, that type of thing. Who makes these laws, who makes these rules that the judges wind up interpreting?
Well, the laws are made by the legislature. So you're right on that. Now, the rules, usually the rules of court is just rules of procedure. Now, the courts make those, makes those rules. But the law is supposed to be by the legislature now then.
So the situation that you just described about where the father, he was not really the father, but he declared paternity and life went on, that's a procedure somewhere?
No, sir. That is a statute law.
Okay.
Usually procedures like times and what you file and where you file and things like that. But no, that is statutory law now then. That's what we call statutory law. Now, there's also another side of law we call case law. And the way that develops is if you try a case and you don't like the ruling on it, and you appeal it. You appeal it to the Court of Civil Appeals, the Court of Criminal Appeals, or the Alabama Supreme Court, whichever one's got jurisdiction of the case. Now then, they can make, what they can do is interpret the law, and you follow it. For instance, I go back to, and a lot of it deals with custody, because custody is not, are not jury questions. There's not much statutory law on custody. There are some, but it's not a lot in there. So the judge has a lot of discretion. He has to do what's fair. He or she has to do what's fair. So if you have a case in front of a judge and you don't like the way out, the outcome of it, you appeal it to circuit court, I mean to the Court of Civil Appeals, and say, look, I had this certain situation. I don't like it. I don't think the ruling's right. I want you to review this case. they don't hear the case again. They look at what the judge looked at, and they say, yes, the judge acted within their discretion, or the judge acted outside of their discretion. Them cases come online, and, I mean, they probably issue four or five opinions that's online that we get. I wouldn't doubt they probably do it a week or at least every 2 weeks. And you can go back over the years and say, hey, Judge, back in 2008, Supreme Court in this case ruled that blah, 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 you can't do that. You know what I'm saying? So that's case law. So that's where kind of the little gray area where the judges make the law, and, you know, in that instance, they kind of do because they determine, and most of it's just discretionary stuff. What a judge has a discretion. If he doesn't have a jury, then the judge is the judge is the jury, you know, and do they abuse their discretion in there?
Is that all the questions you have, Jay?
I'm thinking. All right, so where does statutory law come from? I mean, is that written like in the 1600s or something? Or?
No, that is actually called common law.
Okay.
Yeah, that's common law. There are certain things that's not in statutes that's called common law. But all the statute laws is within the Code of Alabama. I think the, is it 1901 to Constitution, 1975, I think, is when they redid the last code. But it's the Alabama laws that's been around forever.
If a bunch of people wanted to change how that happened, how do they do it? Or can they do it?
You have to have a big election.
And everybody in all 67 counties gets to vote on it, right?
Yeah, and wipe everybody out, legislature, and hope you get the right people in there that's going to make the changes. You know, but most of the laws is pretty good. It does get frustrating sometimes because they overlap. I mean, you may read something in one section of law here, then in this other title, the same thing may say something a little bit different, and you're trying to figure it out. But
well, I'm thinking just in background. Obviously, any court case, you're always going to have somebody who agrees with the outcome and somebody who disagrees with the outcome. That's just natural. You know, you've got somebody on each side of the bench. But thinking, you know, in larger scale, if society in general agrees with the way something happens or doesn't agree with the way something happens, then how do things get changed? That was kind of where I was going with the question.
Yes. You know, and that is that's the idea behind all these constitutional conventions and stuff like that and doing amendments. For instance, the big deal with abortion and stuff like that. You know, a lot of people don't like the Roe versus Wade type of ruling and stuff. So they say, hey, why can't we get a constitutional convention come in here and why don't we get enough states to ratify this amendment that says, hey, if you don't like a ruling from the United States Supreme Court, we can change it. You know, and that's what that, so it's tough when you start changing one thing in the Constitution. It makes it tough. It gets
complicated.
It gets very complicated. And can you imagine the special interest and the money and what all is going to be thrown in there? And you got to count on hopefully your Congress people is going to make the right decisions there and not let their pockets make.
I think
decisions.
We can make this into a very interesting show.
Get a little political with it too.
Don't forget, call in line 256-737-9505. That's 737-9505. If you have a question, Melvin Hastings will be happy to answer it for you. This is Big D. We're going to break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Shine down a light on me, sure path. I promise you I will return. Take me back. Let them get high. Let them get stoned. Everything will be alright if you let it go. Let them get high. Let them get stoned. Everything will be alright if you let it go.
All new independent radio station. Look us up on Facebook. Live 95 Coleman.
Attention Coleman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. Yeah, so we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill. Hey, we're not kidding. Seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com today. Or visit our website, live95coleman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Coleman's Independent Radio. Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio, is proud to present yet another local community program for Coleman. Join us immediately following Sports Talk Live on Thursdays for a brand new show that will help our listeners focus on lifestyle health, including working towards a goal of reaching your optimal weight and creating an optimal health environment for the rest of your life. Join host Sandy Seibert each and every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. for Path Changers, Habits of Health, immediately following Sports Talk Live, right here on the station that is all about Coleman, by Coleman, for Coleman. Live 95.5 FM, Coleman's Independent Radio.
Welcome back to Understanding the Law with Melvin Hastings, Coleman attorney. So why don't we go in and let me ask you some questions about the local judges right here in Coleman. Because, you know, Melvin, there's probably a lot of adults, probably families, and maybe their child, whether, you know, 15 or 25, and they don't really know any judges, and they just want information. So why don't you tell us who the judges are here in Coleman?
All right. The district judges, let's start with them. We have two of them, and actually they have, I started practicing law in 2002, and both of the district judges, it's been Judge Kim Chaney, he's been here for a long time, Judge Chaney, and I think since, what, 92, 94, something like that. And then we've had Terry Thomas and Greg Nicholas, and then now it's Rusty Turner on the other side. At one time, they used to handle all the district court cases. You just get signed to whichever judge, you know, what, it didn't matter what kind of case it was. But now they've kind of split off and said, all right, Judge Chaney, Kim Chaney, handles the traffic cases. He handles the felony district court cases. And he handles the juvenile delinquency cases. So if a juvenile gets in trouble, Judge Turner handles the custody cases, the paternity cases, the DHR cases, small claims cases, and the district civil court cases. And what that means is if you're suing somebody for less than $10,000, you file in district court.
Okay.
If it's above $10,000, you file in circuit court. So the kind of the small claims is like a $6,000 limit, I think, on actually small claims court. So that's they kind of keep them divided. I think they, you know, they help each other, of course, if they need it. But pretty well, if you're going to have a DHR case, you're going to be in front of Judge Turner. You're going to have a custody case, you're going to be in front of Judge Turner. You have a felony case, you're going to be in front of Judge Chaney. So that's the two district court judges we have. The two circuit court judges is Judge Martha Williams and then Judge Greg Nicholas. They used to handle all the cases up there. Now they've kind of, over this last couple of months, kind of split off. Judge Nicholas handles most of the divorce cases in circuit court, and then Judge Williams handles the criminal jury cases. Now they both handle civil cases, whether it be non-jury cases like, you know, contracts or workers' comp cases, stuff like that, or if it's a car accident case, medical malpractice case, or something like that comes up required of a jury. So that's the two circuit court judges. The probate judge, which we haven't talked about probate court, we will hear in a second, is Tammy Brown.
Okay. So does she more or less, or I'm sure she handles a lot, but When we're speaking families, they have a loved one to pass away, and now we have a fiasco amongst family members wanting this, wanting that. There's no will. So now that family has to carry it into probate. So does she handle that?
Yes, sir. She handles anything dealing with estate cases. Whether you have a will or you don't have a will, you can you file it in probate court. That's where it is. That's most of the time. I would say probably 99% of the cases end up finishing there. Usually she enters a judgment if she has to, and then it's all done. If you don't like that, there's a procedure that you can appeal it. There's also a procedure, if you want to, you can remove it from probate court to circuit court if you wanted to, you know. And sometimes people do that. They're just different reasons to do that. In Alabama, I think there's only two or three counties that requires you to have a law license to be a probate judge. Birmingham does, Mobile does, and I believe that's questionable about Montgomery. I don't know if Montgomery requires or not, but all other counties, you don't have to have a law degree. It doesn't knock on anybody, but usually if you got a real complicated case, involves a lot of law, you got lawyers involved in these estate cases, a lot of times they'll move in circuit court, and I think Judge Brown is glad they moved in circuit court. Gets her out of her hair.
I don't blame her. So is she the main final answer when it comes to Billy over here is going to get a car and the sister is going to get something? Is it more in depth than just what I'm thinking?
Yes, but I think people don't realize this, but generally a lot of cases, I mean a super majority of cases settle. Okay, right. You know, people just come up with an agreement. They either run out of money hiring or paying a lawyer,
right,
or they get frustrated, run out of time, just different things come about. And maybe and sometimes people just realize, hey, they ain't gonna use to keep on fighting about this, and they will settle their cases. Now then, if you can't settle it, yeah, you'll have a hearing in front of her, and then she'll determine who gets what and what's fair or whatever else. Sometimes some probate judges just say, sell it all and we'll split the money, you know, if you don't want the stuff. And maybe that's the best way. A lot of times that gets them to settle.
So what about, you know, when we see that people are having these estate sales? Is this something that the probate judge is having you to do? Or is that just a family thing that they're going to try to get rid of all of whatever possessions that grandma has?
I believe probably the majority of them is people agreeing to do it.
Okay.
But now it can probably be court ordered. She probably can court order it. I've never handled one that we've had to do an estate sale, but you could. I think usually probably the family just gets together and says do it. You know, and sometimes people have wills. I do wills all the time, and they don't want they don't want their children or the heirs to fight over it, and they'll say sell everything, split the money.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And and I guess that's the way to do it, is through an estate sale.
And I know it's best. Now here I am going off on this one certain subject, but I know it's always best to have a will to where everything is planned out, you know, by this man. But what if he doesn't? I mean, at any time, can the state come in and take any of his property now that he's passed because he doesn't have a will?
Yeah, it's funny. It's called, what is it called? It's cheats, E-S-C-H-E-A-T-E-S. So cheats.
Okay.
Get cheated by the state. Yeah, there is a process. I can't remember off the top of my head how it works, but they can. They probably don't do it. Only reason that would come into effect is maybe a Medicaid lien or something, and someone has it filed. Usually what happens, if a person doesn't have a will, somebody in their family or an heir will file to be an administrator. You're an executor if you're in a will. You're an administrator if you don't have a will.
Okay.
So they'll file to be an administrator of the estate. And the counties actually have a county administrator. And so the counties can have someone come in, you know, a family does it, do it, or whatever else. But, you know, 3 or 4 years, if no family stepped up, there's a Medicaid lien out there, this person owns property, nobody's done anything about it, then the state can file something to get the, you know, to do something, satisfy their lien.
So if I'm walking up trying to be an administrator over this because he doesn't have a will, and another family member comes up and they want to be an administrator, how's that going to be settled?
It's listed as the statute. There's statute law for that, and it lists priority. Your spouse is first, your children are second, then any other relatives or family members third, and then fourth would be any creditor. So let's say that a creditor of some sort is wanting paid, or let's just go back to the state. You got a Medicaid link. Let's say your mother's in the nursing home. She's run up a bill. Medicaid's paid a lot of money. She owns some property. Medicaid's got a $30,000 lien. The state's going to probably try to find out who in the family is going to file something, or if they're going to file something. If they don't do it, then the state will file something to in probate court to get this going. Okay, once that's done, then if a relative or child steps up and says, "Judge, I want to be the administrator," you know, and if they meet all the requirements, then the judge will probably appoint them to be administrator. You know, because they're the ones more personable. They're the ones that knows more about what the person owned, what their assets were and stuff. So usually I would think the state probably backs off if that person is, all they're doing is more than likely forcing someone to do something, take some action.
So if they force a sale, okay, and I presume the administrator, you know, he's in there, he's part of it, they force the sale, they get $100,000 for the home, they pay the $30,000, so I would imagine maybe the administrator will get the remaining amount of money for that.
Well, the administrator gets a fee. He don't get the remaining amount of money. He can get a fee for it. It used to be, I think at one time it's probably set out in statute. Now it's kind of left up to the judge. But the general number is 2.5% of what goes in, 2.5% of what goes out. So it ends up being 5%. So you got $100,000. Administrator does all this work. He can ask the court, say, "Look, I've done this work. I've had this much money and property come in. I've dispersed this much money and property. It's $100,000 worth of stuff. I want a fee for $5,000.
Right.
So that's what they get entitled to. Now, the money and the property gets dispersed by statute too. There's a statute that says, "Hey, if you have children, if you have a surviving spouse," it gets real complicated. But it goes out to kid. It goes out to your spouse and your kids first. If there's none of them, then it goes out to your parents. If there's none of them, then it goes out to brothers and sisters.
Okay. And that's automatically going to come from the state.
Yeah. Well, that is in the statute. So what I'm saying is, if you had that money that's sold and that lien's satisfied, the remaining amount of money is going to go to heirs. But okay, them heirs are listed. It's called the intestate statute, but it's in. It's under the wills, Title 43. It's under the wills and stuff, but it's part of it. It just tells you exactly how the money goes out. Okay.
And I think it's a very simple process as far as the wills go. And it's maybe something that everyone needs to understand. It is a simple process for you to take care of, or any other attorney in Coleman, that may just take an hour to sit down with an attorney and have it taken care of, and you do not have to worry about all this.
Yes, and you know, one of the real good things about it, if you file to be an administrator of an estate, there's a lot of stuff you have to do. In a will, you can exempt them. So, for instance, an administrator within usually like 90 days, I think, of being a appointed administrator, they have to go through and list every item of property. They have to list everything that's in the estate. All right, and then they have to have a bond. So it costs you. You have to go out and be bonded. It costs you $250, $300, $400 to go to an insurance company to get bonded to be an administrator. That bond renews every year, so you pay that money out every year as long as it goes. And then you have to do a final settlement. So if you have a will, you can exempt your executor from doing that. And that's a good way of doing a will.
So before we go to break, and maybe I shouldn't ask this, but I will, is there a certain cost that most attorneys charge for a will, just to give somebody an idea?
$100, $150. There's probably some that charge you $500 or $1,000. But
okay. In general,
that's ridiculous. They're ripping you off if they do.
Okay. And so, hey, look, listeners, get a will. It's that simple. You're going to save your relatives a lot of headache, and you don't have to worry about the state. It's all going to be taken care of. A will is the way to go. We're going to go to break. Don't forget, you can give us a call in. We've got about another 15 minutes on the show, 737-9505. You're listening to Melvin Hastings and Big D on Understanding the Law, right here on Live 95.5, Coleman's Independent Radio.
Hey guys, Let's face it, we all want to look our best, but with minimal effort, right? Well, that's where Angela at Scissor Salon comes in. She'll get you looking your best so you're always on top of your game. Walk-ins are always welcome. Scissor Salon, Highway 278 East, just past the water plant, 735-3089, 735-3089. Look for the big scissors on the roof.
Attention Coleman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. Yeah, so we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill. Woo-hoo! Hey, we're not kidding, seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com today, or visit our website, live95coleman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Coleman's independent radio.
You've thought about it. You've talked about it. You've even stared into the mirror dreaming about it. Well, now is the time, and Coleman Sports Fit is the place to get that body you've been wanting. Shaping Coleman since 1989, Coleman Sports Fit offers free weights and Cybex machines, treadmills, stair steppers, ellipticals, and an indoor track. Want to get wet? Take a swim in the indoor pool, whirlpool, or steam room. Coleman Sports Fit offers a variety of fun group classes too, like spinning, muscle pump, Zumba, cardio sculpt, or dance fit. Plus, Coleman Sports Fit has the area's only racquetball courts. And for seniors, Coleman Sports Fit is a proud provider of silver sneakers and silver fit, a seniors only exercise plan at little or no cost. Coleman Sports Fit Wellness Center, Highway 31 next to the Ag Center. For more information, visit ColemanSportsFit.com.
You're listening to Live 95.
Hey, was that Duran Duran, Jay?
That'd be Duran Duran.
That was Duran Duran. A View to a Kill.
Yeah, the View to a Kill. Yes, that was the James Bond, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah, that was James Bond.
80-something, yeah, I think.
Man, Duran Duran, they were on top of their game back in the mid-80s.
That is Melissa's favorite artist, and we actually went up to Colorado to see them in concert last year.
Wow.
They did like four shows in the U.S.
Mid-80s. I was a mere child then.
Look, I was a teenager having fun. Look, I could talk about 80s music and just skip the law for the rest of the show.
It is pretty fun.
Flock of Seagulls, I love them, even though they were kind of weird. And I hate to say it, but, you know, I think everybody liked Boy George and Culture Club, as weird as they was.
It had its time. It probably wouldn't fit in very good now. I don't know. It probably wouldn't get as much radio coverage, but it had its time. I listened to it.
I love the 80s.
Comma Chameleon, is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah.
I won't sing.
Oh, me either.
We'll leave it for the next guest.
I am a horrible singer. Nor do I ever do karaoke, nor will I ever do karaoke, because I sound horrible. All right, so we have about 10 minutes left in the show. We're going to go back to a few more questions. Don't forget, if you want to call in, you can. You still have 10 minutes. 256-737-9505 if you have a question for Melvin Hastings here, local Coleman attorney. So I guess my next question, Melvin, can a local judge hear cases from other counties?
That would be the exception. Pretty well the answer is no. These judges, the ones I named off, the district court judges, the probate judges, and the circuit court judges, hear only Coleman County cases. Now then, the exception is if for some reason they're assigned a case from another county. So, for instance, let's say that I don't want to name any names, but let's just say Senator Smith from Morgan County has got an issue, whatever it may be, that's in court. Okay, all the judges may recuse because they know them. They don't want the public to feel like, hey, they may be biased toward them, whatever else. So his case may get moved to Coleman County, and then the Coleman County judges will hear it. You know, there's some cases around here locally where where the Coleman County judges has recused themselves because they've been, it could be a lawyer, for instance. It could be me. You know, I could be getting sued for something, and all these judges says, hey, the perception is we may be biased towards Melvin, so we're going to transfer this case out, and then I will get it assigned to another judge in another county. But typically, these Coleman County judges hear Coleman County cases. City court judges hear only city court cases.
All right, so let me ask you another question. Why do most people want to have a change of venue to another city?
It would be because of the circumstances. Most of the time, it's criminal cases.
Okay.
And it's a high-profile criminal case. It's got a lot of coverage in here, and you want... You know, one of the things that one of the first questions a jury is asked in their orientation is, do you know anything about this case? Have you heard any facts about this case? Because you want a fair and impartial jury. You don't want one that's heard a lot of stuff and read a lot of stuff about this case. So that would be it. One in particular I can remember is one in Winston County probably 10 years ago where this guy had been accused of killing. He was eventually convicted of killing a woman and two or three kids out there and stabbing them to death. And there was a lot of news coverage, of course, out in Winston County about that. And they felt like, hey, there's no way we're ever going to get a impartial jury here. All these juries heard all these different stories. They've read so much about this case. They can't set aside all that stuff and listen just to what comes out during trial, so they moved that case to Coleman County. So a Coleman County jury heard his case and convicted him.
But now I've seen, you know, on TV with the technology that we have, and you see everything from every country, from every state within seconds, be it on the internet, be it on Facebook, be it on whatever. So I think it's, to me, I just find it kind of funny because you're going to have a change of venue on some of these high-profile cases because you want... You know, a fair whatever hearing or whatever, because you don't want people to really know about it.
Yes.
But with today's technology, I mean, it's like everybody knows about it.
Yes.
So really, how's that true now? Because most people do know about it. They've seen it. CNN will wear it out, you know, for a week. So I just don't understand that whole process right there when with today's technology, everybody's already going to know about it. They're already going to have their opinion about it before they even go to jury.
Yes, and, you know, I believe this change of venue stuff is eventually going to go by the wayside. You know what I'm saying? Because things has changed. You can get on AL.com or whatever you want to and know what's happening in almost every county, you know, stuff like that. So you know, you read news stories, but I think a lot of it may involve what is community talk, you know, what they talk about in cafes and Hardee's and Jack's in the mornings, you know, what's everybody talking about? And you know, because I have them all the time. I have people say, well, so-and-so said this, I heard that, you know, and you got to take it with a grain of salt because everybody's got their own different accounts about, you know, what they hear and what they know about the case. So
we'll go to another question. What if Big D does not like the appeal from a judge?
If you don't like the ruling from a judge.
The ruling from a judge.
You can appeal it. Now, the misconception is this. Let's talk about when you get from circuit court. When you get from circuit court and you're appealing to one of the appeals courts, the Civil Court of Appeals or the Criminal Court of Appeals in Montgomery, only thing they look at is what happened in your circuit court case. They don't see you. They don't hear from you. Only thing they see is briefs filed by your lawyers, and they look at the court records and then a transcript of the court proceedings. And they look at it and say, all right, did the judge follow the law or did the judge not follow the law? Did the jury follow the law or did they not follow the law? You don't get a new trial. And that's a big misconception. People says, well, I'll go have a trial. If I don't like it, then I'll appeal it.
Right.
Well, usually you got one shot and that's it. When you're appealing it, most of the time you're not appealing the facts of the case. You're appealing, hey, the judge should have done, he ruled wrong on evidence. He should have let this in. He shouldn't have let that in, whatever else. You're limited to that on appeal. You're not arguing your whole case over again. And like I said, you don't get in front of another judge. You know, some people think, hey, when you appeal it, you go have a trial in front of another judge. That doesn't happen now then. That's from circuit court. Now, like I said before, in city courts and district courts and even in probate courts, you can have a trial there.
And if you don't like the outcome of it, you can appeal it, almost every one of the cases, to the circuit court. There may be a few exceptions to that, but pretty well you can appeal it. Now, when you appeal it to circuit court, you get a whole new trial again.
Okay. So, you know, I'm thinking one of the things that maybe goes on a lot, and I could be wrong, maybe you can answer a question or two on this. Small claims court, because every neighbor is going to get into it. Your dog tore up my fence. And so exactly what is the maximum amount for a small claims court that you can actually sue for?
It's $6,000 now. It used to be, at one time I think it was $2,500, and maybe it changed to $3,000, but now it's $6,000. So as long as your damage is I believe it says $6,000 or less, so if you know it can even be up to $6,000, then you can file it in small claims court. And if you did that in Coleman County, you'd be in front of Judge Turner. He'd hear your case, be no jury, and it's real informal. I mean, you still have rules of evidence, but most small claims cases don't have lawyers involved.
Okay.
You know, and it's just like TV shows. You get up there and tell the judge your side of the story, right, and he'll listen to the other side of the story, and he'll make a ruling. And like you said a minute ago, one party's going to like it, one party's not going to like it. You know, and if you don't like it, that's an example of a case that you can appeal to circuit court. You have to pay the filing fees, appeal it to circuit court, and you can either have another judge hear it if you wanted it, or you can pay another extra $100 and get a jury to hear it.
Okay.
Yep.
So what if the defendant does not show up for small claims court?
Then they get a default judgment. Yep. You if they don't show up, and that's for any court. If a defendant doesn't show up, you can request the judge to give you a default judgment. And if so what that means is you get a judgment by default. Most of the time, you usually write out, hey, judge, this is my damages. This is what I'm requesting a judgment for. And the judge pretty well gives you that, you know, unless it's just something really, really crazy, you know. But if the plaintiff doesn't show up, then the case gets dismissed.
Okay. So the defendant doesn't show up, I get the default win, if you want to say that. So now what's the process of me actually getting my money? Will they garnish their checks?
You have to. You have to file something. When you get a judgment, all you got is a piece of paper.
Right.
Now the question is, what do you do with that piece of paper? You either take it to probate court, file it in the probate court as a judgment, then it'll be a lien upon any property that they have. So, for instance, if they try to mortgage the property or sell their property, there's a lien there, and, you know, and they're going to have to satisfy that lien. That's one way of doing it. The other way is find out where they work at or what bank they use, and then you can file a garnishment, you know, and it'll take that.
On their checking account or on their wages.
Yes.
So, now, is it law that the bank has to do that garnishment on that checking account, or the employer has to do that garnishment on that paycheck?
Yes. If you file a garnishment on a bank, it is for that day. It is that amount of money that they have in that bank account that day. It doesn't continue each day. So if you got a $5,000 judgment and they got $500 in the bank, then the bank sets aside that $500 subject to that garnishment, and then you have to go through a process of collecting it. The bank's not just going to write you a check.
Okay.
You have to file something in court, saying, all right, court, banks come back, they've got $500. I want you to condemn these funds and order the bank to give me the money, and then you kind of go through that process. Now, the employer is a little bit different. If you've got a garnishment, then they're supposed to be taking that money out from your weekly wages, and it's a certain percent, like, was it 25%, I believe, or something. They got to take it out. For instance, in child support and alimony cases, if they don't take it out, the employer can be liable for the money. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
If all right. Done, so right. The show is over, but since I own the radio station, the show must go on. Because I know of I am privy to a situation going on, and I it's not me, but
it's always not Jay.
The walls talk. So somebody was employed on a trial basis for X amount of time, and then left or did not continue to show up for work and was gone. And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, a garnishment walks through the door for said employee, who was never, you know, hired on full time. They were on a trial basis. They were paid, I think, as a 1099 contractor. What happens?
The employer, if he's not presently, when you get filed that garnishment, it asks you to answer as the employer. So you say he's employed or he's not employed. So in that situation, he should mark he's not employed and send that back in, and then that stops the garnishment on that business. But if he marks, hey, he's employed here, then he's under an obligation to take that money out. I mean, if he don't,
then you're going to have, I mean, so, it doesn't make him automatically liable for it. You're going to have to file stuff in court to ask the court to make the employer liable for it. And there's probably certain situations where a court would make it happen.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yes, sir.
I hear a phone ringing.
It's a different line. It's not a radio station. We're in a shared building here.
All righty. Well, if that's all you have, we're going to go ahead and end the show. Want to thank everybody for being tuned in tonight to Understanding the Law with Melvin Hastings, Coleman Attorney.
I would say we're just getting started.
So don't forget, we'll be back next Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Make sure you jot down the phone number, 256-737-9505, next week if you want to call in, make you a list of questions or just one simple question, and let Melvin help you out, help out the community of Coleman. So thanks for being tuned in. I tell you what, you know, this is how I always do the Big D Radio Show. If you don't care, I'm just going to do a quick prayer.
Yes, sir.
And we'll end the show. Heavenly Father, Lord, we just thank you, God, for your guidance, Lord, and being in our lives, Lord. And we just ask that you bless this radio show right here and let the people of Coleman have that opportunity to let Melvin help them. We just reach out to you, Father, and we just thank you for your love, and we thank you most importantly for Jesus Christ and the sacrifice that he made for us on that cross. And Father, we just give you all the praise, all the honor, and all the glory. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. So, looking forward to seeing you again next Tuesday, 6 p.m., to Understanding the Law with Melvin Hastings. This is Big D. God bless you, and God bless America.
Broadcasting from the People's Bank of Alabama studio, from a transmitter as powerful as a hairdryer. Hey, we got it on high. This is Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio. WRJMLP, Coleman.